Welcome to the Egyptian Streets podcast. I'm your host, Noran Morsi, writer and podcast producer at Egyptian Streets. Each week, we invite a notable Egyptian to talk with us as we explore the intersection between Egyptian identity and creative social change from an artistic, educational, or cultural perspective.
Today, joining me as co-host is Hayat Al-Juwayli, an American... an Egyptian filmmaker living in Budapest.
Hi, Noran. How are you? Hi. Yeah, I'm Hayat. I'm not American. I'm Egyptian. I'm a filmmaker. And yeah, I've worked on a couple of shorts, and now I'm working on a TV series.
Awesome. And joining us today is Amir Al-Masri. If you don't know him, he's an actor, and he's been on several both Egyptian and American and British TV shows and movies, and we're going to get to know him a lot today, so stay tuned. Can you introduce yourself for us?
Hi, my name is Amir Al-Masri, like you said, I'm an actor. I've been doing this for about 12 years. And here we are, talking to you on Egyptian Streets.
Amazing.
This is a question. So you've talked often in your previous interviews about the fact that you studied psychology with like a specialization in criminology.
Yeah.
So I was just curious why, first of all, like what kind of led you to that decision? And then subsequently, how has that affected your work now as an actor? Like, is there anything you carry from those studies today?
That's a great question. So I initially studied psychology in my A-levels in the UK. And I always had a deep fascination about how the human mind works, why we make certain decisions as opposed to, you know, our intentions are always varied from person to person. And I remember applying to Royal Holloway University in the UK, and they had just had opened up a new degree called criminology and sociology. And I thought, okay, I always wanted to be an actor, but this might also tie in well with why baddies are baddies. No one thinks they're the bad guy in any narrative. So let's get inside their mens rea. Whether or not they have a criminal intention or not, that's what fascinates me. It did. It helped me a lot, actually. I remember in my first year, we went to a prison, Feltham Young Offenders. And then we went to another prison in Holloway. And we met prisoners from different, you know, who are in for several different kind of, crimes. It was really fascinating getting to know them as human beings and understanding why they got themselves into those situations. There are some, obviously, they've been recurring criminals who've been coming back and forth to jail. You can see the difference between mental illness and those who genuinely are doing it for the sake of, you know, finding it fulfilling or in some way beneficial for them, be it financially or just through adrenaline. And that sort of thing fascinated me as well, because I thought, you know, as a kid, you're not born into a, you know, you're not born thinking that you want to hurt someone or can inflict any pain on others or on yourself. But things change because of your what you see vicariously or what environment you're brought into. And honestly, like, you know, I did that degree because, again, you know, I have Egyptian parents who didn't really see, they saw acting as a hobby. It was something that I always wanted to do, but, you know, it's not something that is very structured or, you know, like a 9-to-5 or something that, you know, it's certain that I'll be working every year. So for them, it was like a good compromise as well to have a backup plan and to have a degree in something that I could apply in any job, you know, be it law. And I did actually, when I was studying, I interned at a law firm. And then at the end of the internship, they said, listen, if you get this degree, you know, you're welcome to start applying, and we'll keep a lookout on your application. And I think you'd be a good candidate for sure. And whilst it was tempting, I always wanted to be an actor. So I thought, you know, at least I have this as a backup, and then we'll see what happens.
I think, like, for Egyptian parents, like, having the possibility of being a lawyer and then deciding to be an actor, that takes being able to do that.
No, you're right. For them, it took a lot of convincing. It took a lot of convincing. And even when I did, you know, my first film in Egypt, Ramadan Mabruk, Abraham Hamouda, it still wasn't, you know, whilst it was, you know, I convinced them of my, you know, my passion for it, my love for it. They always knew that. They still thought, oh, okay, maybe this is going to phase out somehow or not. But it didn't. And I think to my luck, it didn't, you know. But yeah, I mean, like, they are also very supportive. And I did actually go to drama school after that. After I did those two Egyptian films.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into, like, I was wondering, because obviously you did start acting at a young age. I mean, you just named two films that you did quite young, and they were huge successes in Egypt and in the Arab world. And then kind of, like, if I understood correctly, after that you went on to do your criminology studies, etc. So I'm kind of wondering, what was the final push kind of in deciding that you're going to go back to acting and actually, you know, like, take it to the next level and go to acting school and all that?
That was always a plan. It was always a plan. Even when I was at university, when I was studying criminology, I'd still do plays at university. I'd still do, like, you know, and Raw Holloway had huge, huge productions, end of year, summer productions, you know, with a healthy production value for, you know, for a university. It still gave me that kind of that nourishment, or that kind of that it fed my you know, that capacity to still wanting to act. But realistically, if I was going to actually make this into a career, I needed to get paid. and so that's why I did, like, various jobs before I actually made a living out of this. I applied for drama school not thinking I was going to get in, just knowing that I just loved it and I had a little bit of experience. Drama school in the UK is extremely, extremely hard to get into. So I was very lucky that I did. And I was one of the 30 people that got accepted in that year. But, yeah, it also had a lot of challenges, because even when I was at drama school, I was the only one that looked like myself in a year, where everyone was either from Oxford or Cambridge or one of the top universities. And they were all from a certain ilk, from a certain background. And, you know, in my house, we're very Egyptian. We grew up in Britain. We were very still had instilled a lot of Egyptian values at home. So, it was hard to kind of grapple that identity, that double identity, and also see myself as one of them at school. I thought I was, but the industry quickly tells you that you're very different. Industry tells you that actually you got to work double hard to get in the room to play a James or a John or a Ben, whatever. That only hit me when I graduated. I thought, oh, this is going to be cool. It's going to be a walk in the park, but it really wasn't. So yeah, but like I said, nothing was set in place except that I always wanted to be an actor.
Well, good thing for the world that you decided to stick to it. Here you are now.
What you mentioned about feeling like, yeah, like you thought you were one of them, but the industry didn't really agree. Did you have any specific experiences after you graduated where you were looking for jobs, looking for acting jobs, looking for roles, where you struggled a bit finding something that would resonate with you, or were you able to find any roles that felt like you, or did that take some time?
Well, certainly for the first few years, it was very tricky because, you know, I was lucky that I signed with an agent. I was lucky that I got a job straight out of drama school in a film called Rosewater with Jon Stewart. And but it was always still the same thing of like, the guy isn't really from the UK. He either speaks with an accent or he's something like stereotypical. But I did have chances to, you know, to play other characters, and I would either get to the final two or get really close to getting it, and then be pipped to the post because of how I look, because the other person looks more convincingly British than I do. But the idea of Britishness is it's a very difficult thing because, you know, nobody looks specifically British as such. You know, you can look like me and be British. So that was a struggle to kind of open a producer's imagination. Even now to this day, you know, if you look at diversity numbers, it's like winning the lottery. You know, for someone like myself, who to get a leading role, you know, it's much harder for someone like us to be in those positions, even actually behind the camera, in positions of power, in senior positions as well, or heads of departments. It's much harder for someone who is an ethnic minority or is, you know, also from the MENA region to be in a high position. And so when that does happen, when I do hear that there is a producer who is of Egyptian origin or whatever, I'm like, wow, what did you have to do to get to that place? Because I know it must have been super difficult. Or you might not have gone through, you know, traditional routes, or someone gave you a shot because you had something that everyone else was lacking. I always refuse playing typically stereotypical roles, but if a role came to me that was, let's say, he went to Daesh or he started, you know, we went whatever, I want to understand if the script has him as a focus point, or if we understand why he did that, not to humanize him, but also to, I'm playing a human being, so I need to understand his mens rea, his criminal intent, his idea of choosing that path. And if that's not explicitly in the script, if it's not explicit in the script, then I'm not interested in doing it. Because if he's just a cog in this narrative, then it's not interesting for me. I did a film called Daniel not so long ago, and it was a leading role. And I played someone who's a real life character who did a lot of awful, awful things. But we managed to meet people who knew him. We managed to, you know, get our teeth stuck into the idea of his life could have been different had he gone and taken another route. But because of how society is built in the UK, certain people are not given equal chances. And this is what happens when you neglect someone. They go to other routes and they start committing crimes because of your failed system. And that message was very clear in the film. And that's what attracted me to the film. Because you get to see that other side. You get to understand the cogs working in his mind going, fuck, my life could have been totally different.
Now we see, you know, we go back to our first question, and now I can tell that you studied criminology. It's like coming, it's seeping out of you. I actually had a question that's like slightly related, you know, to this whole question of like double identity and the Britishness and the Egyptianness. But I don't know if like you've heard how like people say that people's personality change based on the language they're speaking. I personally feel it a lot. Like, I know when I'm speaking in English, I'm obviously a lot more American. I speak with my hands. I'm very loud. When I'm speaking in Arabic, I'm very shy. Like, so I was wondering how that kind of plays out in your work as an actor, because you've had now, like, in your portfolio work, both in the UK, in Arabic, and not just in Arabic, but in the Syrian dialect, in the Egyptian dialect. So is that something that you think kind of affects the way you act? Does it affect your, I don't know, I was just wanted to put that out there.
That's really interesting. Actually, you know what? I read something that reminded me of that not so long ago about your name actually changing the way you behave or something. You're born, if you're, yeah, apparently if, you, I don't know how they measure this, but they say like, if you're born as a Rami, you'll behave like a typical Rami or something like that.
Well, now we all have a specific idea. Like, I think anyone who now calls their son Rami, they know what
exactly.
He's
going to
do. And they know we'll be successful outside of Egypt.
Yeah, exactly.
That's also true. Exactly.
You have a show.
Well, thank you for being the first, you know, famous Egyptian who's called Rami.
But also, like, if you have very strong names like Maximus or whatever, like that can change your mannerisms and whatnot. I think it's the same with the dialects help tremendously. Like when I played a Syrian musician in Limbo. The language itself is very melodic. It's very softly spoken, and of course that does, and you know, change the way you behave. I, like you, Hayat, I gesticulate a lot. I talk a lot with my arms. I when I talk in English, I'm very, very much more like emphatic. But the Syrian dialect kind of reined that in some way. Which I find very interesting. But yeah, it is true. I think also the language changes every year, right? Egyptian dialect as well, like all the street talk and you know, all that stuff, it's ever evolving. So every time I'm back, I'm having to learn new things as well. So I need to take my time with it.
Yeah. I feel like my dad always makes fun of me and says that I speak like someone who just passed like middle school in Arabic, because like I did leave Egypt when I was like 13, so I don't know how people speak now, so I still speak the way people spoke in like 2010.
I get told that as well. I'm like, oh, gosh, are you from the Middle Ages? What's going on with that?
Well, it's like, yeah, I mean, when I was in Cairo, like, people were like, you speak like your dad, because he'll use expressions that are, like, old, but it's nice. I mean, we're all in the struggle together, I guess.
I will not judge.
And the same... Thank you, Nura. La, bsaraha, like, I mean, I've had to manage a couple interviews in Arabic, and so far, so good-ish. I've managed not to put English words in, but eventually I'll mess up. Again, in the same vein of, like, double identity and all that, how would you describe London and how would you describe Cairo? Doesn't have to do with you, but I feel like we can learn a lot about you based on your relationship with these two cities.
With London, I feel like I don't have time to think. like it's such a fast-paced city. Routine is so like important in London. You know, people are like, you know, organizing what they're doing 2 months from now, you know, let alone like next week or whatever. Like so there I'm like head down, getting in on a train, like kind of minding my own business. And people are like that as well. You know, if you people watch, no one's gonna kind of have eye contact with you. Everyone's gonna look down, either on their phones or newspapers or whatever. Here, I feel like time stands still until you go, I'm gonna do something today. There's a charm to the city here, Cairo, that I love, which makes you feel like you can have more control over how you want to pace yourself. It does move slower, and sometimes that can be really nice because socially you can, the city never sleeps. There is a family oriented kind of vibe to the city that I have. Obviously my relatives are here and stuff, but besides that, even with your friends, there's this culture of always being wanting to be together, always wanting to laugh and whatnot. Even if you have work the next day at 7 a.m.
Who starts work at 7 a.m. and I've never seen
it's a good question.
That is true. When you're on set, that's the only time.
Yeah. That's the only
time. And the only time that you film for like 24 hours a day.
That's something I've heard about and I can't even imagine it. Like someone, I was going to work on a project and they were like, yeah, you know, we're filming from like the January 5th to January 6th. And I was like, cool, okay. And they were like, yeah, like the whole time. And I was like,
yeah. I can't speak for all the series platforms, but like certainly during Ramadan when they're tight on time, the hours seem to just get stuck together, like the days just get stuck together and you can find yourself working, you know, for 20 hour days, or you know, you could be staying there for a whole day, but it's not all the time. But certainly in the last quarter of the block, if they feel like they're tight for time, you're gonna feel it for sure. But yeah. Anyway, going back to your question, I think yeah, Egypt has a. I mean, I romanticize this country a lot more because of my family and stuff and my childhood memories. But definitely, you do need to set your own kind of timetable to get any motion going. You can't just leave it open. I mean, you can, but it would just be a very slow day.
No, I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, I feel the same way about kind of like New York versus Cairo. I would describe it exactly the same.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So kind of like on that vein, so you, I think what's really interesting about your career path, if we want to call it that, but is that you kind of started, so you started with like two big Egyptian hits, and then you went on to do, I mean, I'm summarizing, but you went on to do like huge international productions like Star Wars, and then now you've kind of like, you're nominated for all these awards and everything for an independent British production. So I think it's very interesting because you've kind of like touched a lot of different, you know, you've been filming blockbusters and Hollywood to like indie British films to like Egyptian mainstream. So I'm kind of like interested to, because I think we often, you know, especially in Egypt, people kind of see stardom and they don't see the hard work that comes behind it. And similarly to that, I think in Egypt, it's like often people will do like one Ramadan series and then that's it. They're like the big hit for the next couple of years. But from what I've seen, you kind of like have done a lot of big shows, but you've also taken smaller roles and like TV series and like kind of like guest roles and things like that. So yeah, I was just interested in hearing a bit more about that.
So initially, like with the comedy side of things in Egypt, I was lucky to be a part of those productions. You know, I was a huge fan of and still am of Mohamed Hanidi and Yasmin Abdulaziz, and but I also know that in Egypt we love to laugh, and we love that even through our like hardships, we love to use humor to get through any situation. يعني ما بنحبش النكد قوي, you know, like we love the you know, escapism. Comedy was a challenge for me. People assumed that that was like my thing, my go-to thing, but I found it much harder. You know, it's, I think it's much harder to make people laugh than to make them cry. But yeah. And then I started getting roles off the back of those two films, and I turned them down, which was frustrating because I always wanted to come back to Egypt. But I knew that I wanted to hone my craft. I knew I wanted to just diversify my like roles and stuff. And I wanted to like play different characters and play more dramatic roles. And, you know, those guest roles that I did, you know, in the UK and Europe and then in America were a good experience for me to kind of play different kind of characters. And I was also, with commercial stuff, you're less likely to play kind of meaty, gritty characters. The production value will kind of take the audience's eyes a lot more than the character itself. And so that's why a film like Limbo, which is an indie, which is way more character based and is the sole focus of the story, is a treat for an actor because you get to start and finish the film, you get to understand a someone's plight rather than, you know, something visually stimulating, you know, like explosions or whatnot or fast car chases, whatever, which I also love. But yeah, I think it's important as an actor to kind of vary it up and not be stuck in one thing, if you're lucky enough, that is. You know, the whole Star Wars thing also came off the back of doing a mini series called The State, which was, again, a gritty drama. But the casting director who cast that asked me if I fancied doing something a lot more commercial and had, you know, you get to dress up in some cool Star Wars trooper kind of gear and work with JJ Abrams for a couple of weeks. So that was also like a definite yes, regardless of what I was going to get myself into. So it's kind of like you got to do a lot for yourself and then also do a lot for like, for fun, for an audience as well. I never got into this career because I wanted to be famous or I wanted to, like, I don't know, do like, you know, just Need for Speed 7 or whatever. I always wanted to just play characters that represent, you know, everyday human struggles or everyday life characters. But every now and then, if a, you know, commercial thing does come along, then absolutely. I'm a big fan of Star Wars and Marvel and big kind of blockbuster films and stuff. So that for me is popcorn entertainment. That's the kind of stuff that you want to sit and just relax and not have to think too much and enjoy yourself. So yeah, of course, I'd love to be a part of that as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I really echo that. Like, I'm a huge fan of, like, social dramas. Amir, you know how big of a fan of Limbo I am. But at the same time, I mean, I'm a sucker for, like, rom-coms and everything. So I do think it's, like, working in this industry, it's, like, there's a big responsibility to kind of tell stories that are important and that kind of, like, do push for change. I mean, I know, Noron, that, like, the podcast really, aims to talk about, like, creative social change and all that. But I do think it's also important to kind of highlight that, one, it's important to have fun, and two, that, like, fun can also, like, I'm the biggest believer that, like, one day when there's, like, a rom-com about, like, I don't know, like, a Lebanese student in London or something like that, you know, like, that also does change things because you're more likely to have so many more people go watch that than you are, you know, a movie about the war for the 100th time that, like, people at certain festivals are going to see twice and be like, wow, beautiful, and then move on. I don't know. Anyways, I'm babbling now.
No, I was just going to say, going off of that, I wanted to ask you, Amir, what is your dream project to work on, like absolute dream project or person to work with, actor or director to work with?
Gosh, I don't know about a dream project. That would be a difficult thing to kind of narrow down. There's a lot of things that I still want to play and do. But if I only had one, then that would be it. And I'll be done. But there are a lot of filmmakers that I'd love to work with. There's, you know, obviously the number one for me in abroad in the US would be Martin Scorsese for sure. As much as I'm sure a lot of people have been a big fan of his work, even to date. So I think he's an anomaly, and I would love to be, you know, in the presence of him working on set and kind of learning from him. Again, with the same ilk, like Robert De Niro as well. And to be on set with someone like that and to glean from him and to see what his process is like. I think it's important to be in the room where you're the kind of the lowest denominator in the room. if you're the one with the kind of, if you know everything in the room, then you're in the wrong room, I think. And I'd want to always be inspired by the people I'm in the room with.
On a similar, dream project kind of vein, we obviously have talked about acting a lot because that's what you do. But I heard through the grapevine that you're kind of venturing into other aspects of the film industry.
Yeah.
Is that something you can talk about? Or
you're a spy, aren't you? Yeah. No, I'm joking.
You caught me.
So I'm currently writing. I've co-written a mini series with a friend of mine from the US, and it's part fiction, part real life events that have happened to myself, and it's currently in development with a production company in the UK. It's a comedy drama. I'm not allowed to give too many details, but it's hopefully going to be as funny as it is dramatic. But I think it came at a point where I felt like I needed to be the captain of my own ship, kind of thing. I wanted to kind of control my own future a bit. You can audition for many things and stuff, but you need to also have an idea of how you want to dictate your career. And again, hopefully if this gets made, it can open up doors for people from the MENA region to become creators as well. We've seen it in the US with Rami. I'd love to do the same in the UK. And I don't want it to just be a one-off thing. I don't want it to be the fact that only Rami can do that or only myself can do that. That, you know, it becomes so common that it's just a normality. It's something that we can all do. And without anyone batting an eyelid and going, well, why is that person at the helm of it? But So that's been in development. Hopefully we'll finish writing the rest of the scripts by the end of the year, and then we'll see what happens.
That sounds really exciting.
No, but that's great news. I mean, as you were saying before, you know, it's not just about representation on the camera. It's also like off the camera. And like, if there aren't people like us writing things, then obviously there's not going to be roles that fit us. So it's like a whole, there's like so much to kind of go through before we're at where we want to be at. So honestly, it's like great to hear that you're venturing behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, no, thank you. Absolutely. And obviously I'm not, this isn't where my I've been most experienced at in my career. But you know, if you want to make change, you gotta be part of the conversation as well. So, but also, you know, I'm not doing it alone. I'm doing it with a very experienced you know, writer friend of mine who knows what he's doing as well. So, and who is of, you know, of a similar background as well. So, and it was important for us to make sure that the team that surrounds us are familiar with that culture as well. So yeah, fingers crossed. But I hope, you know, also in the UK, there's this, MENA collective, you know, people from all different backgrounds, from, you know, from the Middle East and North Africa, who want to make sure, you know, stick up to people in the industry in Hollywood and the UK, and go, well, show me the numbers, show me how many people are actually like us who are working behind the scenes as well, who are producers, who are writers, who are directors. But yeah, we're seeing slow progress.
Slowly,
but hopefully
but
it's
surely.
Not a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can go ahead to our quick fire round of questions, which we end the podcast with.
Right.
I'll just ask you some quick questions and you're going to give me some quick answers. Is that cool?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. I'll see what happens.
It's like 2 + 2 + 5 + 7.
Well, that's not math. Okay.
I wouldn't know. I'd have to check my calculator.
Okay, so what is your favorite Egyptian food?
Melokheya, that just came to my mind.
Unpopular
it's a very
opinion,
common
I
answer,
hate melokheya.
And I support it.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well,
oh,
what
no.
Do you like?
I know, someone should take my Egyptian passport away, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, what's your favorite British food?
That exists.
Nothing.
Sorry,
I like the answer, honestly.
Apologies
it's
to the British people.
Probably curry, if anything. And it's not even
which
English.
Isn't like British.
But like, yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite place in Egypt?
Favorite place in Egypt? Gosh, that's hard.
He hasn't been
that's
to
really
Fayoum,
hard.
So he wouldn't know.
I haven't been to Fayoum, but it probably would be Fayoum, wouldn't it? I would say Siwa, probably. I don't know.
Good one.
Nice. And what's your favorite Egyptian film?
My favorite Egyptian film. Omarati Yacoubian is probably one of my faves.
Mm. Okay. And last but not least, what's your favorite foreign film? So that can be anything that's not Egyptian.
Favorite foreign film. Ooh, so many. The Departed. I like The Departed.
Okay.
Choice.
All right. I think that's all from us. Hey, do you have anything to...
I mean, I do have one thing that's on my mind, but it's like so not related to everything we were just talking about.
Go ahead.
No, but I was just going to say, I mean, when we first met and kind of like talked about Limbo and stuff, I brought up that like it reminded me a lot of like Karasmaki and Fassbinder and Wes Anderson and things like that.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like on a directorial level. So I was wondering as an actor, because obviously, I mean, I don't want to spoil the film for those who haven't seen it. But it's a very particular style, both visually but in the acting as well. So I was wondering if you kind of like, what were your references with that? Sorry, that's like a geeky question.
No, I mean, definitely for Ben Sharrock, the director, writer, you know, Ilya Suleiman and Aki Karismaki are one of his biggest inspirations. For me as an actor, it was all about less is more. And we had this kind of code word, which was Buster Keaton. And, you know, Buster Keaton is an actor who absolutely gave nothing on the surface, but gave so much with his physicality. Mm-hmm. So whenever there was a scene where he felt like it was me being more emotive. Like there was a certain scene with my mother, I'm making a phone call to her. And then there's a scene later down the line as well, quite an emotional scene, which makes me break down. And me as myself, I got really emotional. And he would always come over to me and be like, Buster Keaton. That's what you need to do. And so then I just immediately knew it was, the feeling was there. You just need to just be present in the scene and forget about your own feelings about this person for the moment. Because if you break down, the audience get a relief and they need to feel the emotion on your behalf. Don't experience it for us now. Which is, I think, a great note for any film you take on.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, it worked because it's a phenomenal film. Your performance in it is incredible.
Thank you.
And on that note, I think it was absolutely lovely getting to chat with you, kind of like going deeper into the little, you know, because we've heard bits and pieces about you everywhere in the past couple of months. So it's been nice to kind of sit down and chat about all that.
Likewise. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Of course.
For sure.
And one last thing, is there any project that's coming up that people can look forward to watching, or where can they find your work?
The next thing that's coming out hopefully will be on Netflix, and it's called The One. I need to find out if it's going to be in Netflix MENA. Hopefully it will, should be. But yeah, that'll be on Netflix end of the year.
And where can we watch Limbo?
Oh yeah, I wanted to ask that too.
Oh, Limbo. Yeah, Limbo will be in cinemas, you know, hopefully when cinemas are an environment where we can all go to, fingers crossed. I think in the UK, it's going to be in May, 7th of May, but then it will be on Mubi, which is a streaming platform after that. So, you know, if you have Mubi, you can watch it there. But I have every intention to hopefully screen it here in Egypt. So that everyone can see it here as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for this interview, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
This was wonderful.
Thanks so much, guys.
That concludes today's episode. Thank you so much to our guest Amir Al-Masri for joining us today, and my co-host Hayat Al-Juwaili. Hayat, what did you think of this episode, and like, what do you think of what Amir had to say?
I mean, I think it was definitely really fun. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, it's weird being on Zoom instead of like all together somewhere having tea and but no, it was definitely really fun, and I think it's really interesting to kind of like the. It's my first time doing a podcast, and I think it gives you room to kind of go a lot deeper because you have time, versus when you're like writing, you're thinking about like how much can I fit onto a page. So it was really nice kind of getting to take the bits and pieces of information we knew and to delve deeper into them. And we've touched on very different things, you know, from identity and representation to acting and like his models, and so no, it was very fun and informative, both about him as a person but also about kind of what it's like being an Egyptian actor kind of making it in Hollywood and in the UK. I don't know what the UK's Hollywood is called.
yeah, and I thought I had no idea that he was writing. Like you had that insider information, and it sounds really exciting because like he really could be like the UK's Rami.
Yeah, I love how Rami has really become like the standpoint, you know, for like anything moving forward. It's like you're the girl Rami, you're the British Rami, you're. But he deserves it, frankly.
But like as much as I love Rami and his show, hopefully he won't be the only.
I listened to an interview once that he did where he said like he said something along those lines of what you're saying. He was like, I hope, like, I don't want Rami to be like the middle, like Egyptian American show. I want Rami to be the first Egyptian American show, because I want there to be like a Rami with a female lead and a Rami with like a you know, black lead. And so I think it's like, he's aware of that, and it's great. Like, he does want to share the stage with everyone. And we see that in the show. I mean, the fact that every other episode almost is dedicated to one of the other characters. So yeah, no, I think it's exciting. It's an exciting time to be like an Arab creative in the film industry, because there is finally kind of room for us, and people are finally starting to listen, and there's a long road ahead. But yeah, it seems promising.
Definitely, yeah. Thank you so much again, Hayat, for being our guest host here. I really enjoyed chatting with you and Amir.
And thank you, Nuran, for having us. Really, it was an absolute pleasure.
Of course, yeah.
Egyptian Streets is a podcast produced for the independent online publication at egyptianstreets.com. The show is edited and produced by Noron Morsi. Production support from the Egyptian Streets team. Our theme music is The Zeppelin by Blue Dot Sessions. Tune in to the Egyptian Streets podcast every other Sunday, and don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. I'm Noron Morsi.